You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of On the Vine, the official podcast of IvyHoopsOnline.com. It is January 7th, 2016. It is our second episode of the 2015-2016 year. We decided to just skip right through non-conference play and get right to the good stuff. We're back here today with another great panel for you. I'm your host, Peter Andrews, and we have got a great crew on the show. Firstly, as always, my co-host, Mike Tony. Mike, how's it going?
Excellent, Peter. It's genuinely fantastic to be with you. A lot of fascinating ground to cover.
Indeed. We've got the man himself, Toothless Tiger, a.k.a. George Clark. George, how's it going?
Very fine. Looking forward to the season getting underway in just a couple days.
We're joined by a writer for Ivy Hoops Online who covers Harvard. It's Robert, a.k.a. Crimson Crawford. Rob, how's it going?
Going great. Happy to be here.
Robert has upgraded in mic quality since the last time he was on this show. This is the sorts of attention to detail that we are famous for here at On the Vine. And last but not least, joining us from Daily Pennsylvanian, as well as, of course, Ivy Hoops Online, it's Steven Tidings. Steven, how's it going?
It's going well. Yay, I'm on.
Yes, we have a contractual thing that, like, every show has to have me, Mike, and at least one Tidings, and then the rest of it kind of, you know, figures it out amongst itself.
So. Sounds pretty fair.
So, enough for the introductions. Let's get to basketball. Since the last time we did the show, there have been approximately a bajillion basketball games involving Ivy League teams, and we are now almost completely done with non-conference play. In fact, we're just a few short days away from the kickoff of the 14-game tournament, Harvard versus Dartmouth, Penn versus Princeton, the traditional first matchups. But before we get forward-looking, let's do a little bit of recap. Let's take a look at what happened in the non-conference slate. And I think the best way to start talking about that is to compare what we know now with what we thought we knew in November. So I'm going to start with Mike Tony. And Mike, what is the biggest surprise that you've seen so far in the non-conference schedule?
Probably the fact that, well, I don't know if I'd term it as a surprise, maybe for two onlookers it might be, people that don't follow the Ivy League, but the Ivy League hasn't really dipped in quality play this season, even with Harvard having a, you know, quote-unquote down year. You know, Ivy's still ranked 15th in the KenPom conference standings, and there isn't that signature win out there, maybe outside of Harvard beating top 50 BYU. But, you know, the league is still the league. It's still on an upswing, and, you know, we've got good stuff. Now, individually, you look at the fact that, you know, Cornell doesn't totally suck. They're actually a game better at this point, 14 games in, than they were last year with Sean Miller. You've got, you know, Luke Chassick, Henry Caruso are just, you know, having monster seasons and helping the top tier of the league stay to the, you know, high mid-major quality it's been for the last, I don't know, five or six years or so.
George, what do you got on this topic?
The most impressive thing, well, as far as Princeton is concerned, when the schedule came out, you could almost predict that at this point, all other things being equal, we'd be 9-4, and that's exactly where we are. The games we've lost, frankly, were we played well in a couple of those games, Miami and Maryland. Not so well at St. Joe's and got beat up, and not so well at Stony Brook and got beat up, but we figured to lose those games. The games that we won, we figured to win, and most of those games were decisive. The toughest game we played that we won was against Liberty. From Lynchburg, Virginia, and that's a very young team with a new coach. But there aren't any real surprises at Princeton. Mitch Henderson has his recruits in the lineup. They come at you in waves. As we discussed before we started, we've been injury-free other than and Hans Brace going down before the season started. So things are looking up for Princeton. Harvard, to me, is the biggest surprise because they've come on so well. They've now suffering some injuries that have set them back a little bit, but Yale is clearly number one, Princeton number two, Harvard may be number three, or Columbia may be number three, but that's the top of the first division is what we anticipated it would be, and I'll be shocked if any team goes better than 11-3. I would think two or three teams may end up at 11-3 or 10-4.
So, Robert, I tend to agree with George that the surprise this year has been Harvard's, for lack of a better term, not failing as much as some of us had hoped. So on that point, I have two questions. One, can you give us an update on what you've heard about the injuries sustained last weekend? And two, what do you think's been the key to this team looking so strong throughout non-conference?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the injuries, what I've heard is that McCarthy, I've heard both Patrick Steves, Tommy McCarthy, two of the injured players who didn't play against Vermont and who McCarthy was injured during Vermont. Steves didn't dress, and that turned out to be a pretty tough game, a 3-point loss, so it just shows their importance. I've heard McCarthy, both are day-to-day, haven't practiced. McCarthy, I've heard, is expected to play. Steves, I heard, was apparently not very badly injured in the Vermont game and was close to playing, but because it was they needed to rest him, he's been injury-prone in the past. That's just a rumor I've heard, so I would expect both to play. But at the same time, it's, you know, with the IV injuries, it's always tough to know what to expect. And one quick thing before I talk about Harvard's what their key has been. I actually disagree a little with George. I think Columbia has been the biggest surprise to me. I thought they could be at the top of the league at this point. They still could be, but I think that Harvard's trajectory has been what we might expect. They might have gone a little higher than we expected, but they started off pretty rough. They started off with a 1-6 record against Division I teams, and they've been able to improve a lot. But I think the improvement and the bad at the beginning, better near where we are now, has been what I've expected and what some people expected too. And I think the biggest key for Harvard's success has been Zena Edosimo. First of all, he's been throwing himself into the Ivy Player of the Year race, and he went from basically being a guy who was a liability on the court, big time recruit who was always in there. We'd hoped he'd develop, but he was always really bringing the team down in his first 2 years. And this year, he just turned into one of the best players in the league, and he's the reason they are where they are today. Patrick Steves has also been huge off the bench. A guy who didn't play his first 3 years until now, a senior. The three-point shooting has been incredible, which is something that you might not have seen coming. And that's really the offense, is Zena and the three-point shooting. So that's been the key for Harvard, I think.
Well, we'll come back to Columbia in a second because I think there's more to say there. But let's kick it over to Steven. You've been covering the one coaching change of the 2015 campaign so far. How is the Steve Donohue revolution going at the University of Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the team has gotten used to his system, and I think you can definitely see the groundwork of how Penn basketball a year or two from now is going to be back towards the top of the Ivy League using kind of the blueprint of what he's placed. But, you know, we're talking about surprises, but I don't think it's a huge surprise that Penn, they're really young, they're not quite up to snuff, and also, as with a lot of coaching changes, their roster doesn't quite fit the new coach just yet. And so we're still seeing whether, you know, Coach Donohue can get the recruits to fully mold into the system.
Just on Penn for 1 second, the game that I was covering, the Columbia-Howard game when this was happening, but getting pasted in the first half by Villanova, and pasted might even be a kind word for it, Do you see that as really more of an outlier this year, or do you think that there are going to be a couple games in conference play where they're going to show up at a Princeton or a Yale and get slaughtered?
I think Villanova's way out of Penn's league, so I'm doing hand motions, and it's obviously not showing up on the radio. Villanova is a top-tier team, and Penn's very clearly not right now. But I don't think that we're going to see... I mean, last year they lost, I think it was like four games by 25-plus points, and I don't think we're going to see quite that this year. I think Columbia's going to inevitably like have an offensive spurt against them and beat them down one game, but then I could easily see Penn winning the other game, probably at the Palestra. And I think that they can at least compete with the other teams. I think they'll get a win against one of those like top four, top three teams, maybe even a couple, but they're like a 5-9, 6-8 Ivy team that's probably not going to get killed that often. It definitely not as much as last year, but they'll certainly be not quite up to snuff.
I want to keep holding my fire on Columbia because I don't like talking about things that make me sad. But let's talk about Yale for 1 second, which I feel like we shouldn't neglect the team that's pretty clearly the class of the conference right now. Justin Sears doing a lot of Justin Sears things all year long. But it's almost weird to say that Yale has been exactly what we expected coming in. Mike, do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I think so. I think Ivy, you know, again, Ivy onlookers should have expected Mekhi Mason to develop as instantly as he did. You know, I think seeing Yale compete at SMU the way they did, you know, the way they've thrashed inferior competition, largely thanks to Mekhi Mason being, you know, just a really gritty, you know, driver, shooter, ball distributor. He's really fun to watch. And he was fun to watch down the stretch last season, too. So the key was getting him to that point where he could not replace Javier Duren, but at least fill the shoes, I suppose. I mean, I guess he did replace them. You know, he already is at that point. And, you know, the only thing that you look at Yale as maybe a minus at this point is the lack of backcourt depth. But then again, to your point, Peter, we knew that going in. They are what, as Denny Green would say, they are who we thought they were. And, you know, it's going to be hard for... It's hard to foresee Yale slipping up in conference play, losing to a Penn, for example, or a Cornell or a Brown. I think Yale is because they offensively rebound so much, because their defense is clearly the best in the league, because the fundamentals are there and the experience is there with Sears and Sherrod, Montague, they have the shooting, they have the interior presence. I don't see them slipping up, and in a 14-game tournament, that means everything. That means you're pretty much guaranteed to that 10 or 11 win threshold that is going to be so crucial. Yale is the front runner we thought that they would be.
Well, you say you don't see them slipping up, but the thing to remember about Yale is that in almost cartoonish step on a banana peel and break their neck sort of fashion, I mean, this is a team that was 2 seconds away from going to the tournament. And I do think the question is whether or not they've grown past that experience, you know.
True. I mean, I can see them losing at Dartmouth again, though. I mean, that was a top-tier team last year, too. I think that, you know, I don't see them losing to a Brown, but I can see them losing to, you know, to Dartmouth or Columbia. Maybe not Princeton, because they seem to – Sears really seems to have the Tigers' number, and that's another crucial point and maybe another conversation entirely. But – yeah, you know, nobody remembers that banana peel nightmare more than Justin Sears and James Jones, I'm sure.
So let's talk about Columbia for a second, because coming in to the season, a bit of a trendy pick to win the league, trendy pick in the sense that I wanted that to happen very badly. But it's been kind of an up and down non-conference slate for them, and I have sort of two related points on this that I'll let everyone chime in on. One of which is I've noticed that there's a certain some of the Columbia fans think that Ivy Hoops Online, which I'm putting in air quotation marks, when I think they really just mean Mike, who is the one who runs the Twitter account and runs sort of the overall league observations, has been very harsh on Columbia, and in their view, a little bit unnecessarily so. So I do want to give Mike a chance to respond to that in a second. But the other thing is, this team makes no sense to me. What's frustrating about Columbia is that I think they're both they're so capable of moments of brilliance that actually surpass. I think their ceiling, if they ever got all these pieces to click right, is higher than any other team in the league. They haven't been able to get there for whatever reason, and they're struggling in part because, you know, one of the things that I covered a game last week, and I talked about how difficult it was to get Rosenberg and Mullins reintegrated into the offense. You know, it's not exactly the same as having returning players. They didn't play with the team for the last year. And then you've also got the injuries to Rosenberg and Cohen. Kyle Smith in particular really counts on Isaac Cohen as a glue guy. But they're also, you know, they have such high ceilings, and then they also have coughed games up in pretty miserable fashion. The Longwood game, I don't know how they lost that game. They nearly blew it to Maryland Eastern Shore last night. You know, they should have beaten Stony Brook. They had a 17-point lead over Stony Brook in the second half. Didn't pull that off. So I don't know. I am not happy with the way that Columbia has performed in the non-conference play, but I also think it's way too early to write it off and say that this team is clearly a step behind at least Harvard. I think that they're still should be a clear part of the conversation that they could be alive at the end of this.
I would agree. I would say one thing about Columbia that I've noticed is that, like you were saying, their ceiling is really high. And I think one of my observations would be that this isn't really a team that's cut out for a 14-game tournament where every game is so important. And I think in a conference tournament, this team, if they go in hot, could be the favorite to win it if it's a four-team tournament, something like that. But looking at a 14-game tournament where a loss to Cornell in the first two games of the season can be just as devastating as losing a close one to a better team at the end of the year, obviously. So I think that's, like Mike was saying, how Yale is will be less susceptible to those tough losses. I think you see, like, Maryland Eastern Shore, they almost lose that game to a 300-plus team in KenPom. I think that could be Columbia's pitfall, is losing those bad games. But on any given night, are they're a threat to beat anyone? And if they win the league and go to the NCAA tournament, they could be they could pull a big upset. So I do think they're still a very good team. I just think they have to become more consistent at this point.
Well, and I think it's fair to say real quick that I think part of the reason why Columbia fans are frustrated with Mike is you look at, George mentioned early on, you know, St. Joe's blew Princeton out of the water. St. Joe's Stony Brook really took care of Princeton with relative ease. Columbia played St. Joe's to the last possession, gave them everything they got, and only lost, I think, Mauro Lowe's layup rimmed out at the end. They lost by 1 point. Stony Brook, again, they had that huge lead. They clearly had Stony Brook's number for 30 minutes of that game. Obviously, you need to play for 40 minutes. But there is the question of just, I wonder whether there's some amount of, you know, we bake our expectations into our reviews of these teams at all times. We expect Columbia to do this because every year it seems like they come in a little hot and on conference and then they can't finish games during the tournament. Just like we kind of feel like Harvard is always going to be right around there at the end because that's what they've been doing. Kind of how, you know, we always think Princeton is going to be 10 times better in conference play because that's just whatever weird alchemy they have. So I don't really know. That's a tough thing to think about. And I keep mentioning Mike without letting him respond to this. So,
well, as far as Columbia fans, you know, thinking they're getting, you know, overly scrutinized or shafted, first of all, I think that sometimes people confuse me or Ivy Hoops Online with the other Ivy Hoops pundit with two first names, Mike James, Ivy B-Ball on Twitter. I do know, I think one time they said we were you know, dissing Columbia when actually it was something that, Mike James said on the Ivy basketball forum. But most of the time, I have been pretty harsh on Columbia because, you know, it's just not working out. It reminds me of, you know, me rooting for the Pittsburgh Penguins and wondering why all the offensive juggernauts aren't coming together to, you know, to form some sort of cohesion, some sort of winning alchemy that's not there. I think that, you know, the Longwood loss is the worst loss so far, you know, of this non-conference slate for the Ivies. This is it. This has to be it. You know, Columbia hasn't looked as good non-conference as they have in the past, and that has been their peak in the past. Now, looking at the present, looking at this team, the fact of the matter is there's no solution on defense. I don't see that the personnel is there. Alex Rosenberg is like a sieve on that side of the floor. You know, I wrote about it in the pre-conference primer from last night. You know, Kyle Smith, I think, is doing a fine job with the personnel he has, but he's tried Rosenberg with Luke Petrasek, with Dirk Jr., Lucas Meisner. He's tried Kobe. He's paired Kobe with both of those players, Lucas and Luke. He's tried Connor Voss to start the season. You know, all the offensive pieces don't matter if they can't get some sort of solution in the front court. We know Matt Olo is great at picking pockets and providing on-the-ball defense, you know, in the backcourt. The front court has to be key for Columbia, whether it's against, you know, Justin Sears, whether it's against Princeton's multifaceted attack, whether it's against Zena. So, yeah, I don't see the answer there, and, you know, I don't know that Kyle Smith does either. And that's going to be the bottom line as to whether or not Columbia can finish first as opposed to third or, best-case scenario, second, or maybe falling behind Harvard to finish fourth. They definitely are in that top tier, as you said, Peter, and they need to stay in that discussion, but they have to have that asterisk of, well, okay, how do you make this work on defense? How do you keep collapsing and giving up 25, 26 points in the final 10 minutes of games as they've done, you know, time after time after time this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think last word on this, and then we're going to move on to the next thing. I do think the key to the season, and I'm not just saying this because Sam Tidings and I made up a cool nickname for him, I think the key to the season is going to be Dirk Jr., Lucas Meisner. the game I saw against Howard, he and Petrasek worked really well together, both defensively and offensively. They have a really good sense of where the other one is. Meisner got fouled out of the game, but he had some... They were some not great calls, I would say, by the referee. But the foul trouble has been the problem. Is Kyle Smith has not been able to keep the same set of big men on the floor for any extended period of time. So if Meisner can develop, I think that's the biggest thing for Columbia. If not, might be a long season. Let's switch gears for a second. I will just remind everyone out there listening, you can send us questions on Twitter or through the Mixlr app, and we'll be happy to answer them later on the show. You know, it's a pretty interactive situation we got going here. Also like to announce that On the Vine is sponsored by no one. If anyone wants to give us money to keep doing this podcast, you can also let us know on Twitter or Mixlr, and we'll take your money. So let's talk about the Ivy first team after non-conference. George Clark, who are your five guys right now?
Zena has been a huge surprise, as Robert Crawford has indicated. I think he is clearly in the Player of the Year running. He's a first-teamer. Sears is going to be a first-teamer without any doubt. He is just scary as I contemplate us playing Yale, because we have two post defenders who could commit 10 fouls between them in 10 minutes. So we could have a real tussle with Sears. I think Henry Caruso deserves a lot of consideration. He's really been the bell cow for us so far. He's not really come out of nowhere, but he has emerged as a real scoring threat. He plays above the rim a lot, and it's very surprising to defenders to see what he can do. In the backcourt, let me defer to somebody else. I have those three guys clearly far and away first-teamers at this point. Hatter's playing pretty well for Cornell. Will probably get some consideration for the first team. I think Mekhi Mason is probably a first-teamer at Yale. He's really done well. I thought that they would miss Duren much more than they have, and that may be because Sherrod has come back and has played so well. But I think Mekhi Mason has been a big surprise at Yale in terms of how good he has played. So that would be my first team at this point.
Steven, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I agree with, you know, that front court's pretty solid. The one guy from Penn who has some shot is Darren Nelson Henry. If he got back to his, you know, his beginning of the season, six straight games with double figure scoring. His game against LaSalle was unbelievable. I think he went for like 31-15. But he's been only so recently. If he gets back to what he was doing early in the season, you know, a couple games against Princeton like he always has, then he has a chance. I have to add Mauro Lowe to the guard, to the backcourt all-Ivy conversation. That guy can shoot the lights out when he wants to, whenever. And so, other than that, I'm not
excuse
sure
me,
how much
Steven, I want a do-over. I want to put Mauro Lowe in there. I forgot about him.
That's
Peter,
right, George. I was actually just about to say that you were about to be kicked off the podcast unless you amended that statement.
That close.
Yeah, no, it's a fine line. You guys need to know that I'm quite a tyrannical leader, and you will agree that Mauro Lowe is a first team all Ivy player.
I agree. I'm just old and I forgot it.
Robert, what are your thoughts on this one? I assume you agree about the big man.
Oh yeah, I would agree. I have Lowe, Hatter, Sears, and Zenna. I think there is a lot of guys at the top. Caruso is, I think, definitely in the mix. I would think Cedric Kwakiementse is also a name you have to mention. He's half a rebound away from averaging a double-double. His numbers are almost identical to Zenna's, and Zenna's had a lot more exposure, publicity playing for Harvard on ESPN, big games like that. But I think Kwakiementse has been under the radar. That would be my only thing to add to what everyone else has said, which I agree with.
Well, I think we already hit Mike. You named the same list of five players in your preview the other night. I don't think there's much dispute there. I think that the player of the year race, just to touch on briefly, it strikes me that it's early to talk about that, mostly because it seems to me that the player of the year is usually just the best team on the best player on the team that wins the league, or the best player on the team that comes very close to winning the league. What was it 2 years ago when Wesley Saunders won it ahead of Sears and Rosenberg, and everyone was a little surprised, mostly because Harvard was the team that came out on top. Last year was Sears, and I think if Harvard wins, it's going to be Zenna. I think if Yale wins, it's going to be Justin Sears. Princeton wins, maybe Henry Caruso, I don't really know. And if Columbia wins, it's going to be the chairman. So that'll be interesting to watch those guys. I also, the thing I will say about, particularly about Lowe, but I haven't watched so much these other guys, but last year there was a real sense that Lowe turned it on during the playoffs, the conference play. And one of the things, I talked to him after the game, and he said, until this December break, he hadn't had more than a couple days off from playing basketball in months, stretching back into the summer, because he was playing internationally. He was playing for Germany, and he went to that, right into practicing for the Lions. And there's been a sense that he's been holding back a little bit. He's naturally a bit more deferential guy, trying to make passes, not always shoot first. you know, last year, the last 3 weeks of Ivy play, he had 3 30-point-plus games when it became apparent that he had to do it all. And so that, to me, the other story for Columbia is how much Mauro Loh decides he needs to be the guy. Because I think on pure skill, if he wants to, you know, the limits on what he can do in the Ivy League are vast. So I think that more or less wraps up our conversation with the best players around the league. I'm going to play the music for 1 sec. When we come back, we're going to burrow right into the start of league play. We'll talk a little bit about the saga of one gentleman who's no longer an Ivy League basketball player. And if any of you ask questions, we'll answer them too. Stay tuned.
You're listening to On the Vine, a podcast about Ivy League basketball, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com.
Back to the show. We've got here with us, I'm Peter Andrews for On the Vine, brought to you by IvyHoopsOnline.com. Joined, as always, by Mike Toney, along with George Clark, Robert Crawford, and Stephen Tidings. And it's just about time. We've broken down what happened in the last 2 months, and now it's time to get into league play, kicking off with Penn and Princeton and Harvard and Dartmouth coming right up. Let's start with Harvard-Dartmouth, and I want to start by asking Robert to give us his thoughts on how important this game is for Harvard and what he sees as the key matchup.
Yeah, well, first of all, I think the importance is obvious. It's last year they did lose one of these first games, ended up winning the league, obviously, but there's going to be so much less room for error this year. You have to be able to win those games against the bottom four, especially at home. My main thing to watch would be Dartmouth. One of their main strengths is forcing turnovers. They have one of the best, they steal the ball at one of the best rates in the country, top 10, according to Ken Pomeroy steal percentage, and Harvard's very turnover prone. So I think that's one of the biggest matchups, especially with McCarthy's status uncertain. So I think the biggest thing to watch would be the turnovers. That's one thing that Dartmouth could exploit. And, you know, also last year Harvard was had a lead at halftime. In the game they lost, they gave up something like a 22-2 run or something crazy in the second half. So I think just the main thing is just going to be playing 40 minutes, obviously, for a young team, first Ivy game for a lot of guys who are playing key roles. And I think if they just have guys healthy, they're careful with the ball for the whole 40 minutes, they'll be able to win the game. I think matchup to watch would be Miles Wright and Agunwo Okoli. Miles Wright's been one of the more potent scorers. He went for 39 in a game earlier this year. And Agunwo Okoli's on Harvard, usually been tasked with guarding the opposing team's best player. So that would be my matchup to watch.
We haven't talked that much about Dartmouth, partially because we just, you know, we don't have a Dartmouth person on the show right now. So I'll ask Mike, who's our go-to for generalist. What have you seen so far from Paul Cormier's team this year that you like, don't like? You know, they had a surprising upper division finish last year, seemed to be a little bit off the pace this year. What are your thoughts on Dartmouth?
I feel like Dartmouth always has the defense under Cormier that's going to keep him in games. Evan Boudreau has to be considered a favorite, along with Cornell's Matt Morgan, for Rookie of the Year, certainly. And you know, I think that this team is... can easily pull off this upset, especially in the same court that they, as Robert alluded to, reeled off that 26-2 run, last season. Just one of the most surreal things I can remember watching in Ivy League basketball. They have 8 losses, and they have looked a little down lately. A couple of bad losses, actually, but. You know, this is a team that creates turnovers, first in the league in that category. I think that, you know, this is going to be a tough game for Harvard. I don't predict a loss for the Crimson here, but it's going to be a tough matchup, and I don't see Zena getting necessarily everything he wants in this one, even if Harvard is fully healthy. Dartmouth can be tricky to beat off the dribble, and you kind of have to try to beat them that way, though, based on their, you know, perimeter D. I don't know that that's necessarily a strength for Harvard, especially when you're talking about McCarthy and Steve's being, you know, maybe iffy. But Dartmouth's exciting. I think they're right on the outer edge of what would be considered top tier status. And anytime Dartmouth and Harvard get together, wild things seem to happen.
One on the topic of when two teams get together, wild things seem to happen. Let's go 250 miles down I-95 from Leavitt's, where the Palestra will be the scene of the second game on Saturday, which features the University of Pennsylvania taking on Princeton. First Ivy game. Well, I guess Steve Donahue's returned to Ivy play after taking a few years off to do something in Boston. I forget what exactly he was doing there. Recruiting. Yeah, out recruiting. Let's talk to Steven first. Penn, the home team, always awkward when these Ivy games are during break. The students, I imagine, won't be around. What do you expect to see in this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, on that first point, I've written each of the last 2 years about how it's kind of ridiculous that they have it. This game during Penn's break, where no Penn student's going to be there. It's going to be all alums at the game. And then when they could easily just put it in the middle of Ivy play, as they have done in the past. But in terms of the actual matchup, I think the key is, Darian Nelson Henry's had a lot of success against Princeton in the past. They're going to need to have him to have a strong game. Which he didn't start last game, which was pretty interesting against Binghamton. So if he's not starting and is limited minutes-wise, that could be a huge detriment to Penn. But if they get Darian Nelson Henry going, the key is who can he feed the ball to? Because he's been solid this year in terms of, passing out of the post. So the question is Sam Jones going to be hitting threes, which he hasn't been that much recently. Jackson Donahue's been hitting a lot. Antonio Woods, after a really strong stretch mid-non-conference play, has been cooled off a little bit. So if, one of those guys or Matt Howard can get going alongside DNH, that's the key for Penn. And then just one quick side thing. I was at practice today, and I was talking to Jamal Lewis about just the Penn-Princeton rivalry and how he first got indoctrinated into it. So 6 years ago when he was a junior in high school, he came for a visit to Penn. He was wearing bright orange sneakers. And Jerome Allen, immediately when Jamal walks into the locker room, is like, take them off. You have to take those off. And Jamal was just kind of dumbfounded, like, what's going on? And so that's how he first found out about the Penn-Princeton rivalry and how seriously they take it at the Palestra.
So we know that Penn takes one side of it seriously. George, I know Princeton takes equally seriously. What's your take on this one? Will you be in attendance in the Cathedral of College Basketball this weekend?
I certainly will. I'll be accompanied by my son from the class of 96 and his 7-year-old son from the class of 28, I guess it'll be. I'm not sure.
Don't make me feel old, George.
The Palestra is just the cathedral. It's the greatest place to play. The great games that I've seen there over the years are, I can't even count them all. It's a great atmosphere. Unfortunately for Penn, it's not going to be an intimidating atmosphere because the students aren't there, because the expectations for this team aren't that great. I don't know if any of you have been in the Palestra when it was filled for a Penn-Princeton game. The atmosphere is unrivaled. We haven't seen that in a long time, and I hope we don't see it Saturday. But I agree with Stephen that Nelson Henry is the key. If we're not prepared to play him as we have not played him in the past, we haven't been prepared for him several times, and he has killed us. He doesn't have enough around him, however, to beat us by himself, and he can kick the ball out, and they shoot a lot of threes. They don't make enough threes. We have had four double-figure scorers in four or five of our last six or seven games. I mean, the scoring balance has been tremendous for us. Caruso seems to lead the way, but we get production from a lot of sources. We rebound the ball pretty well. Our defense has not been up to Princeton standards, but we've been outscoring people by enough that it really doesn't matter. We should be a heavy favorite in this ball game, even though it's on the road. I'm looking forward to it. We were a favorite there 2 years ago. We lost. It was a heartbreaking, derailing ball game. Our title hopes were vanquished pretty early on because of a bad call at the Pluster. Well, I suggest it was a bad call. Some people may disagree, but it still is very vivid in my mind. But I think we should have the better of it this week. And I should mention, this is the second game of a doubleheader. The Penn women and the Princeton women are playing at 1 o'clock.
It'll be a great game.
The best two teams will be fighting all year, and somebody's going to make a statement in the first game of the season. So I'm looking forward to both games.
So I'll spare the panel from having to hear some commentary on what I think is really the big game of Saturday, which is the Columbia Lions hosting Central Pennsylvania. All you need to know about that game is that the Columbia women played Central Pennsylvania last week and won 102-18 or something like that. So I don't think there's much to say there. So let's go around the horn once and get everyone's predictions for the weekend. Got to start this tradition again. And I will pick randomly by pointing at my screen. Robert, you're first.
Princeton and Harvard.
Steven?
Going to go with the same.
George?
I concur. I think Dartmouth has a better chance to beat Harvard than Penn does to beat Princeton, but I think Harvard and Princeton will win.
Mike?
I take the favorites too. Very close games, though.
All right, and I think Dartmouth and Penn are going to win. So, perfect. Well done. good. You know, I can't have it be unanimous. It's not fun if everyone agrees on this stuff, even though I am almost assuredly wrong. Let's take 2 minutes and with a moment of silence here for as someone departed the Ivy League this week, none other than Mr. Tony Hicks, who left the Penn basketball program before the season started. He is transferring to, let me see if I'm pronouncing this right, Louisville? Anyway, he's transferring to the University of Louisville, where he'll presumably play about 4 minutes a game next year for Rick Pitino. Steven, you got anything on this? Do you want to share? Or are you as surprised by the rest of us?
I was surprised, but it makes a lot of sense. Louisville, when you look at their roster right now, they don't have many guards, and they just this year got two fifth-year transfers, including one from University City, Damian Lee from Drexel, and that's their two leading scorers right now. I wouldn't actually be surprised if Tony Hicks plays a pretty big role for Louisville next year. They still won't have that much depth at guard next year, and Hicks, you know, for pluses and minuses throughout his career, he was a pretty consistent scorer, and that's something Louisville's going to need at the one or the two next year.
So does anyone have a favorite Tony Hicks moment that they want to share as we say goodbye to?
I understand that Tony Hicks had an outstanding visit, a recruiting visit to Louisville. I don't know the details, but I understand that he really enjoyed himself down there. We may hear about it during the NCAA investigation.
I mean, my Tony Hicks for me, I mean, probably my favorite, one of my favorite Ivy games ever. I was on KCR doing the radio call of Columbia versus Penn with Miles Johnson in 2013, the home game, which Columbia won by like 25 points. And that was a game where Tony Hicks punched Miko Lyles, was ejected. What you know, most people weren't listening to the broadcast. My favorite thing about that was Miles and I are sitting off the side. We didn't see what had happened. The ref, like, points to Tony Hicks, like, you're out of there, after, like, an interminable video review. And we're still sitting off the side, what's going on? When a ref comes over to the two of us and points at Miles to, like, give him his headset, and the ref speaks in the, and I suddenly realize I'm talking to the referee, and I ask him on air, what happened? And he's, like, speaking into the microphone, number one, ejected, punching Miko Lyles. And I've never seen a referee do that before. So, for nothing else, I will remember Tony Hicks for allowing that beautiful moment to happen.
Yeah, Steven and I were there too.
Yeah, like, I didn't. I don't think I knew you guys back then.
No, we didn't have the pleasure yet. But yeah, we saw the other side of that, and you know, a swing is a swing. Let's just call it at that.
It sure is,
Peter. When you mentioned Tony Hicks leaving, it brings to mind the fact that the Ivy League 2 weeks ago had slipped to 17th in the Ken Pomeroy ratings of all Division I conferences. There was some talk about it on message boards and Twitter. And my observation was the fact that potentially four or five first or second team all Ivy players are playing somewhere else this year. Mm-hmm. The league lost. Well, Hicks never played. That wasn't even, he wasn't one of the players I was thinking about at the time, but Princeton lost Denton Kuhn. Dartmouth lost Alex Mottola. Connecticut gained Sean Miller from Cornell. And Pittsburgh is playing Raffi Maia quite a bit.
And let's not even forget the injuries to Siani Chambers and Hans Brace. They're not playing elsewhere, but that's talent that's not in the league right
now. Absolutely. But the most recent Ken Pomeroy ratings have the Ivy League back up at number 15, which is about as high as the Ivy League has climbed in 6, 7, or 8 years.
Yeah, close to 14. Ratings. Yeah.
So it's indicative of what has been called a rising tide in our league. We've got a lot of really good players and a lot of really decent teams.
Yeah, and you, all you have to do is watch the games to see that. You know, it's very apparent, even with just the way Princeton attacks the rim, and you know, there's superior athleticism. You don't need a Ken Pom ranking or any other simulation. All you need to do is watch the games and enjoy it. It's there. Just, you know, bask in the glory of Ivy League basketball right now.
Yeah, I want to mention one other player, if I may, before you crown Boudreau as Rookie of the Year. I don't know if Devin Kennedy is going to play enough at Princeton to be in that conversation, but if he does, he will be. There is a very, very talented young man from Indiana who has done a lot for us in a few minutes, and you're going to enjoy seeing him if you haven't yet.
All right, so I think that just about brings us to the end of this particular episode. I'm going to go around. Does anyone have a last thought they want to provide? I don't want to cut anyone off here, but I mean, we're about to get into the exciting meat of the 14-game tournament. I will share one story. So many of you know, I live out on the West Coast now, but I did get to cover a Columbia game over winter break. Afterward, I had a chance to talk to Luke Petrasek, who we haven't mentioned in the podcast, but has been having a pretty good year. And it's a good reminder that, you know, sometimes we talk about these guys as abstractions and you know, we just made fun of Tony Hicks for 5 minutes, which probably didn't need to do. But two things that Petrasek said that stood out to me that I just want to relay, one of which was he had his first double-double in this game, and we asked him about it, and he looks down and he says, yeah, you know, people give me stick for being bad at rebounding, so this game I wanted to go out and try to prove that I was good at rebounding. it's interesting to know that, like, you know, these guys are, some of them are reading the same stuff we are there, and they take it as a personal slight. You know, I don't actually know about you guys. I've never played college athletics or college basketball, so good to get a look into the mindset. And then the other on the point of athleticism was actually he was talking about him and Lucas Meisner apparently have a pact that any time they're on the run, they should look for the other one for an alley-oop. Now, I don't know how many alley-oops have been successfully executed in the history of the Ivy League, but it's not a large number. And I think he recognized that because right after he told us, he kind of looked sheepishly down at the ground and said, "Don't tell Coach Smith I said that."
So. Luke to Lucas, Lucas to Luke. Sounds good. Yeah. The spotlight on these guys is very, very real. So they know they're under the microscope, for better or worse. Even with Ivy League
athletics. Peter, you mentioned that Mauro Lowe might have been tired because of the amount of basketball that he's played in those for months and months and months, probably around the year-round, I'm sure. Yeah. And it brought to mind the fact that Hans Brace, who also played in the German national team, did pretty much the same thing, and that there a lot of people have conjectured that perhaps he was run down to the point where he might have been injury-prone because he played so much. It's just a thought that came to mind when you said that Lowe was fatigued.
Yeah,
these kids do play an awful lot of basketball all the time.
Well, and they're going directly from, you know, these guys who play overseas, and then they come back here, and even though practice doesn't technically start right away, they have informal team-sponsored practices, they have lifts, and then they go into the regular practices run by the coaches. So I can see how it can be overwhelming. I think it's pretty clear that Kyle Smith was managing Mauro's minutes for the last couple weeks. I think he looked like he had that burst back after winter break. So we'll see. I'm really looking forward to this 14-game tournament, which is about to start. Always a good time. And we'll be here to bring it to you, not just on the Vine, but obviously all the great coverage at ivyhoopsonline.com. Mike Tony editing a lot of great writers, and also me, as we get into it. We're also going to try to have on the Vine on a semi-regular basis. I don't know how exactly it's going to work. Mike and I got to talk about it, but we're going to try to be here. We're going to try to keep getting some great guests on the panel. Not to say that, we had a pretty great panel tonight. So I'd like to just send my thanks to Stephen Tidings for joining us. Stephen, have a good evening.
Thank you.
Robert?
Thanks, Rhett.
Crimson Crawford, it's been good to hear your voice again.
Yep, thank you. Likewise, always good to hear it.
George Clark, thanks as always for your perspective on the Princeton Tigers.
You're very welcome, Peter. It's great to see you. Enjoy the weather on the West Coast.
Well, I don't know about that. It has been raining for like 48 consecutive hours out here. But I guess we can't complain because the drought needs to end somehow. And thanks, as always, to the editor-in-chief and, commanding general of the Ivy Hoops Online Army, Mike Tony. Mike, thanks so much.
I'll take that. Thank you truly, Peter.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. It's been a good time. You can always find us on Twitter at Ivy Hoops Online, at ivyhoopsonline.com, all that good stuff. I'm Peter Andrews, signing off on behalf of On the Vine. Have a great evening.